It's a roller coaster.
It's fresh.
It's luminous.
It's breathless.
It's funny.
It's funny.
Exhilarating.
It's a jack-in-the-box.
It's imaginative. It's expansive.
Colorful.
It's frightening.
It's a little scary.
It's energetic.
It's frenetic.
It's punchy.
It's rhythmic.
It's risky.
It's
winded.
It's joyful.
It's Andrew.
The first time that I heard Andrew Norman's music,
I'm actually doing paperwork.
I'm in Van Kamp Hall.
I was actually playing Andrew Norman's music.
The group is getting ready to play
in my office stereo. And
the piano makes this little tiny phrase.
That breathless quality.
And just as the piano is about to finish its phrase. The whole rest of the ensemble comes crashing in.
It never just sits there on the page. It never just floats in the room.
Which sounds almost like
a trip to a very, very good amusement park.
It's really driving and full of energy.
As though some SWAT team has just come into the moment of silence where you're contemplating some poetic image.
It grabs you by the collar immediately and says, "Hey, listen."
And then all of a sudden it sort of splinters and you're constantly going, wait, what is that?
But within this kind of great expansiveness.
After a while, I'm drawn away from my paperwork.
It struck me immediately as a voice that is unique, original.
The sophistication and the humor and the timing.
This great sense of unfolding.
I'm not able to concentrate on what I was doing, and I'm actually concentrating on what I'm listening to.
It's changing constantly and holding your attention. To me, that's the sign of really fantastic art.
And some of the sounds are simple enough that you can grasp what they are.
Every piece is a unique sound world, completely unique.
And some of them you're thinking, whoa, who put this slippery stuff on the floor as you're sliding all around with the strings and their glissandos? And so there's this amazing sense of trying to figure out where your bearings are, and yet at no point do you ever feel threatened or that it isn't worth it. I'm David Robertson, music director of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra.
I'm Alex Sopp, and I play the flute with Y Music and with The Night.
I'm Gil Rose, artistic director and founder of the Boston Modern Orchestra Project.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Higdon. I'm a composer.
I'm Nadia Sirota. Today we've been mining the brain of Andrew Norman. As we've said a few times on the show today, Andrew has always been attracted to massive ensembles. He's been writing orchestra music since he was 14. That having been said, last year, Andrew wrote an orchestra piece that was his biggest yet. In a commission for Gil Rose and the Boston Modern Orchestra Project, Andrew wrote a 45-minute symphonic piece that represents something akin to a symphony number one.
The piece is called Playing. It is really big, and they gave me sort of free rein to do what I wanted. And I was like, all right, I'm going to write an expansive symphonic piece. It's in three big parts. About a week ago, maybe 10 days ago, I had the idea to call them level one, level two, and level three.
Is this sort of like a video game?
There's definitely a video game reference here.
You've written a piece about a video game before.
Yeah, no, it's a recurring motive in my output. I'm not a gamer myself, but I really love watching. And I think there's something very interesting about the way a narrative is processed in a video game and the way one works through time in a video game. The idea of trying things again and again. This is very natural to how video games work. You try it, you fail. You try, you choose a door, you go down there, it didn't work, you go back, you choose another door. I think of it in a very formal sense. I actually think there's something about symphonic form that is very similar to this idea of, like, the do-over button and the, like, trying things multiple ways. So, like, in a Beethoven symphony, they present some ideas, they mix them all up, right? And then they go back and they try them all again and they get them right.
Right.
So what was gotten wrong at the beginning that created this sort of dissonance, we would say, they go back and they put everything in the right arrangement, which to me is a very video game-like idea of, like, we're working our way through this thing. Something's, you know, some things go right, some things go wrong. And then finally we kind of figure everything out. What had been kind of a mess, we figure out and we do it right. I could go on and on and on about this, but for me, what's so amazing about the symphonic tradition, not necessarily all the colors and the amazing sounds that an orchestra can make, it's the amazing formal sense you can get from an extended piece of music with no words in it. And the idea, like, what's so amazing to me is when you're listening to a symphony and you have this realization, like, oh, I've heard this, but now it's different. Or I'm different because of, like, the 3 minutes of music that happened in between. Like, I'm in a different place, and, like, that sense of like, a formal click going on in your head, like, oh, yeah, that was what happened before.
And you get the payoff of, like, a finale that feels great.
Yeah!
You don't have a lot of time on your own in listening to a symphony to sort of play with these ideas. They have to be presented to you in a way where you are going to contextualize them differently. How did you use this in play?
Well, there's a lot of techniques, but one of them is that, like, the piece presents you with a gazillion different ideas at the beginning. And gradually, over the course of the piece, some of these ideas become important. As they come back, they start transforming, and some of them don't. Some of them are kind of like wrong doors. The piece very much, I would say, jumps around in its own narrative, something that's very common not only to video games, but also a lot of cinema and TV these days, of narratives that loop back on themselves that aren't linear. There's this climax that happens over and over and over in the piece play, and every time it gets to this critical juncture, it comes up with a different answer. But those are all wrong, and finally, at one point, towards the end of the piece, it comes up with the climax that is the right answer, or the answer that leads it forward. This is a very Beethoven idea, actually. There's nothing new about it. So the percussionists in this piece are not just banging around on things, but, well, they are banging around on things, but those things actually perform operations on the rest of the orchestra. They're like triggers or like buttons on a control for video games. So, like, there's a pause button. Every time one of the percussionists hits a particular instrument, the orchestra pauses, and then there's like a fast forward button. All sorts of different buttons that I decided in advance that these things were going to have these different operations. And so who knows if anyone can hear this or not, but, like, that's one of the ways that I actually wrote the piece, is like, well, what's happening? What would it sound like if I randomly paused it at any given moment? And I try it a few times, you know, or, like, what if I just randomly sped it up and fast forward? And the piece, I mean, there's so many different definitions for the word play. Play can be a very happy, collaborative, creative word. It can also be slightly dark, like this idea of manipulation or control. Say you got played, which I think about, like, you know, a conductor waving his arms and the orchestra plays is very much like a chain of control. Like, they're doing something and people are, they're being played. These percussionists are kind of, in a way, playing the rest of the orchestra, kind of like a puppet and master kind of. Anyways, there's like this playful aspect of play, this sadistic, sinister aspect of it. Also, it's like a play.
Right, sure.
I love thinking about an orchestra not just in terms of its sonic potential, but in terms of its human potential. These are human beings making sound. It goes to the ideas we were discussing earlier about the physicality of making sounds and how this can be really dramatic and powerful, like people making sound. And I did think of the orchestra in terms of various protagonists that are interacting with each other on a very interpersonal level.
Hi, I'm Porter Anderson from Tampa, Florida. Links to all the music featured on today's show, along with Andrew Norman's website, are available at q2music.org/meetthecomposer. Meet the Composer was produced by Nadia Sirota and Alexander Overington. Bea Chaloner was the assisting producer, and the executive producer was Alex Ambrose. Thanks to Hannes Brown and Elena Saavedra Buckley. Very special thanks to Gil Rose and BMOP, Jennifer Higdon, David Robertson and Alex Sopp, and to the LA Philharmonic for use of their live recording of Try. And a very special thanks as well to our Kickstarter supporters, including Eric Sommers, Cecil Wasserman, Richard Perry, Bill Bragan, Mickey Sirota, and Greg Brown. Thanks to New Music USA for their flexibility with the use of the Meet the Composer name, which became famous through their legacy organization founded by composer John Duffy. I'm Porter Anderson.
You're listening to New York's Q2 Music, part of Classical 105.9 WQXR. Q2 Music is a listener-supported online station devoted to music of living composers. Q2 is home for immersive festivals, live webcasts, and on-demand concerts from today's leading music performers. Find us at Q2 on Facebook, Q2 Music on Twitter, and online at q2music.org.